now proud to be Indians. There's been a whole movement to make the Indians realize that they are Indians, and they are proud of being Indians, and they are proud of their heritage, although they feel that much of what was once the Chippewa culture is now no longer. They resent being still wards of the federal government, and that they are considered incompetent to handle their own affairs. It's understandable that there is resentment on the part of the Indians against those who forced him to change his way of life and who have held him in abeyance for many years. In the early day, they were forbidden to speak their own language, the Chippewa language, in the schools. So only the old persons speak it today. The second generation understands it but don't speak it too well. The present generation is not interested in learning it except where someone sets up a class to teach it. And it is being taught as in the Department of Foreign Language at the University of Minnesota. And there are other groups that are teaching the language. Traditionally, the Chippewa were proud of being, a Chippewa was proud of being a good hunter. And he felt like a man because he could determine his own life. He got along well with others, he was generous, he was gentle with children, he cared for the aged, he was faithful to his word, and he had the ability to speak out of men, among the men. Always the Chippewa have preferred group action to individual action. The mistake made by non-Indians even today is to communicate with a leader, supposedly a leader, but he should really speak to the group, to him only as a member of a group who has a with the group makes the decisions. He's really not the leader in our sense. He has no followers. The word one man does not necessarily mean that the group is committed to what he has to say. It's group action that's important. And then there is a resentment on the part of the Indians that they are expected to accommodate themselves to the white man's culture, where they feel that the white man should give a great deal of consideration to the Chippewa culture. The Indians are often described as being bewildered, aimless, or hopeless, but it's because of this situation that they are that. Among the Indians, it's a joke to have the Chippewa language instead of keeping it with the Indian culture the department at the University of Minnesota. The Chippewa language was put in the foreign languages department. There's only one Indian person that has a degree in language. When they asked him what foreign language he spoke, he said English. He studied English and got his master's in language. He used the English language as his foreign language, being Chippewa was his native language, and they accepted it. One of the women in one of the culture centers was applying for a job, and they wanted to know what her language requirement would be, and she said Chippewa. She knew they couldn't examine her in that. There are some things that have been retained from the Chippewa culture. One of them is the importance of the obligations of the extended family over all other obligations. Then the non-disciplining of children. often they withdraw rather than in order to avoid an interpersonal conflict. They're not competitive. They have a respect for the individual and generosity towards others in need. They are not interested in acquiring material possessions to obtain status. And it's about time that the Chippewa are allowed to make their own decisions and say what they'd like to have on the reservation. If they wanted to start an AA program, most Indians would go along 100% because it's their thing, it's what they want to do. And it just hasn't worked. And we've seen too many of these do-gooders that want to come in, and it just doesn't work. I would even go so far as to say this, that Indian people from long ago and now are not the type of people that would like to be told what to do. They didn't like to listen to that. They would like to learn in their own way. That's not saying they don't want to learn. They're willing to learn, but in their own, on their own grounds. They want to do it their own way. If a person here wants to be like an architect, fine, but let him be an architect. But let him do it in his own way. Let him go out and see if he can find it, if he wants help. Then he'll go over and ask for help for this type of thing. The Indians know what they want, but it's too late to change them now. They always say that Indian people are waiting for people to come out and give them a handout. This has been going out for so many years. Let them come to me then. Let them help me. They won't help. Let me help myself, so I'll let them come and help me. That's the feeling that I have. And I'm sure that that's the way everybody feels about the whole thing. And I just can't see it any other way. Another move along there about six spaces and then record this. There's a great deal of mobility among the Chippewa. They move into the larger cities and then move back to the reservation. This interferes. They return to the reservation usually during the deer and the ricing seasons or when they're expecting a baby because mothers like their babies born on the reservation. This mobility interferes with the school attendance of the children. Another reason they moved to the reservation is that they must live on tax-free land to qualify for federal scholarships, and some Indians return to the reservation to fulfill this requirement. So some Indians leave the reservation when they find themselves ineligible for welfare services. New paragraph. A Chippewa family who moves to a city has economic concerns and adjustment to city life. This overwhelms the parents, and regular school attendance does not seem to have to them to be the paramount problem. Dropouts are higher for Indians than any other group. However, attendance seems to be improving. There are neighborhood houses who seem to fill a void in recreation and counseling, which is not always available through the schools. Some psychological testing can now be obtained from the university. New paragraph. A new youth development program to be conducted by the Community Health and Welfare Council has been founded to study juvenile school dropouts and youth employment. An experienced staff will work with all local agencies, schools, churches, industry, clubs, and the community. The grant under which they operate is part of a national project for the control and prevention of delinquency. Youth employment is a new organization which concentrates on the employment of minority youth in the cities. One aim of this group is to continue school attendance. Some Indian students continue their studies after high school with or without help from state or federal scholarships. Every Indian on the reservation can have a garden, and most Indians do have one. They need to put a petition in writing that they want a garden, and then some men come to plow their garden and give them the seeds. The Indians now have to have a license to hunt deer. But there are some reservations that have no deer, and so no deer, so they go to the Indians go to another reservation to the hunting. Paragraph: there are no pre-puberty fasts anymore, and no puberty rites for girls. The Chippewa still help each other, one another a great deal. Paragraph. Many Chippewa reservations have a credit union, and some that do not are now working on them. Paragraph. Practically, no Chippewa live in wigwams. However, there are wigwams on some reservations near the maple sugar bushes and wild ricing lakes. Sometimes they could be found too in the area where deer are hunted. All reservations now have housing with running water and electricity, but not all Indian, all Chippewa live in such houses. The housing on the reservation, improvement and upkeep and repair is difficult because Indians living on trust land usually is unable to mortgage his property to get a loan. They're usually workers of low income and seasonable work. So the repayment of mortgages would be difficult too if loans could be made. A procedure is being worked out by which a tribe can set up a housing authority. The individual Indian must get a 50-year or longer lease for his assigned land from the tribal council. Financing can then be done locally with the federal housing, the FHA, guaranteeing the loan, or the local housing authority can issue bonds which will be bought by the FHA providing the funds. It is difficult for the Chippewa because of their erratic income. The federal housing program are based on monthly repayments. Very few Indians can afford public housing rents, which are designed for the lowest income levels of urban people. Paragraph. Employment for Indians. Some women sew on coats in the sewing factory in Onamia. Some Chippewa have AIDS work in the Onamia hospital. A few work at the summer resorts, but not many. Few of the older women still do birch bark work, but there are no longer any birch bark canoes being made. No one knows how. Many Indians are employed to do paperwork in the offices of the poverty programs. Then there is a factory. Some reservations have a factory, and this gives employment to many. Wherever possible, Indians are employed as to head or be associated with the Head Start programs under the Office of Economic Opportunity, OEO. This program began around 1965. Paragraph. In the 1930s, the Indians had the right to hunt and fish on the reservations, but now they have to go through the state legislature and to get these rights. Leech Lake has just recently, Leech Lake Reservation in Chippewa Reservation in Minnesota has just recently gotten these rights. But such rights for one reservation do not necessarily give rights on other reservations. And then, too, some of them, for the fishing rights, some reservations have no lakes. The chairman, Arthur, asks different people how they feel about different situations, whether they are for or against, and then he proceeds from there. Arthur is looking for funds for a marina, and he's still looking for places to apply. He feels that they could get this thing off the ground. They could be a self-supporting reservation. They have qualified people that know the lakes well and could be fishing guides. A paragraph. In some states, like in Minnesota, the law is clearly responsible, the meeting of the welfare needs is clearly the responsibility of the county or township of residence. Since the Indians are citizens of the state, whether they live on the reservation or off, state services must be made equally available to them. And paragraph. It is a federal policy to provide services on reservation where they are not available from other sources. It seems that the ultimate goal of federal programs is a full integration of the Indians as American citizens, something which the American citizens have just become aware of and are, they don't want to be integrated. The way the Congress has it, the eventual transfer of full responsibility goes to the state and the federal government programs will be withdrawn. However, Congress has never established who is eligible for federal Indian services. In 1954, medical services were transferred from the Bureau of Indian Affairs to the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. Both agencies urged a definition of who was eligible for services, but nothing was written into the law. In Minnesota, in contracts with the state, it means that federal Indian programs are limited to those who are at least one-fourth Indian and reside on tax-exempt land. Paragraph. One of the real problems is the jurisdictional battles between the various levels of government. There are such levels in local, state, tribal, and federal government, each declaring its continued responsibility for the future of the Minnesota Indians. Whatever the decisions are, the declaration should be based on a view that the Indian citizen is an asset to be developed rather than as a burden which the rest of the nation has unfairly thrust upon them. It seems that the Indians and the non-Indians are beginning to resist the volunteer program. Should be a program empowered to bargain on the question of where federal responsibility ends and state responsibility begins. Should coordinate the services and offer the assistance of experts. Money invested in this way would lead to the self-sufficiency of most of these segments of our population, and in the end would mean a substantial reduction in the necessary welfare costs. But the primary decision regarding their lives and property should be left to the Indians themselves. These would be decisions they could accept and live by, since they would be their own, and their plans could be altered and improved as their experiences might dictate. The recreation for the Chippewa has changed, too. Many homes have TVs, have a TV and a radio, now that there is electricity. There seem to be no more gambling games left on most of the reservations, but such old Chippewa games as the squaw dance and the giveaway dance exist everywhere. There are also bowling leagues, softball leagues, and basketball leagues. There are also cribbage tournaments. Annually, in general, every reservation has a powwow. However, the gambling games like the moccasin game and the bone game are slowly coming back. Religion. The Medewiwin, Medewiwin, may still be found on some reservations. However, the old people who would participate and know about it have nearly all joined the Christian religions. Some reservations, especially the Mille Lacs reservation, there are some sacred drums in which, to many of the Indians, have a religious ceremonial. On the Mille Lacs, there are 6 drums, and each drum has its own group. There's also a lady drum group. Two women own that drum. Each drum has a membership. Drums are no longer made. These are old drums. However, if they tear something like that, then they will repair it. But they don't make a new one. They put a new skin on it, and that's it. It may need new beadwork, too. And we do that beadwork and stuff like that, but the whole total drum is no longer made new. Every spring and every fall of the year, they have a drum ceremonial. This is not for tourists. It is strictly a proper thing. They allow non-members to come in, but merely as observers. They don't participate. Anybody can really come in, but if you came in with a tape recorder, they would say that you do not play the tape recorder in the ceremonial part. In the spring, they have a drum dance to pray for a good summer, so they'll have good crops and much wild rice and anything else for good health, and also to see one another in the fall again. Then in the fall, they give thanks for all the good that has been done for them. In other words, in the spring, they're asking for good food, and in the fall, they thank for what they've received. It's really a Thanksgiving type of thing. The drum societies meet here in a community center, and some of them hold theirs in the old traditional type dance hall. They've had that for all these years for that purpose. Jim Little's knowledge comes in handy here. He's the one who does the talking. That's on the Mille Lacs reservation. Older people who have been listening, and usually it's the drum owner who owns the drum who does the talking and stuff like that. If a drum owner dies, the the drum is passed on to one of his sons. It's not just passed down to anyone. It's a great honor to have one of these positions, and he has to be in that position. For instance, Arthur started off as a head singer in the drum society. Then they got me the drum. Then they gave me the drum that I now have. In fact, the old man that was a boat builder owned the canoe builder owned the drum that I've got now. See, I own one of those drums. I don't play the drum. The owner does not have a say, or he hasn't the right to, like, for instance, as an administrator. In my position right now, I have a right to say it should be done here and this should be done there. That's as a chairman of the tribe. But in a society, it's the other way. It's the people who have the say. It's the people who belong to the drum society who say, we've got to do this. They all agree upon one thing and then they do it. See, it isn't the drum owner that has any say at all. Arthur was the head singer of the drum that he now owns. They asked me if I wanted the position, and I did. And at the time, I didn't think I would be able to do it, to carry out the duties, because a drum owner really has to have a lot more than a normal person. For instance, if I have something, I would not be able to keep this thing. I would have to give it away to somebody. For instance, I might have a pair of moccasins and somebody comes out to me and says, I like your moccasins. Then I would be obligated to give that person those moccasins, provided that I had another pair. It isn't like I have to give something away that I really need myself. The drum players are chosen by the people of the drum society. They just don't say, for instance, there is Simon. Let's have him in the drum society. They look for a person they think really participates in the program and truly believes in it and helps and does a lot of work. Then if he doesn't do anything wrong, it's just like the church type deal. He has to really believe in it first before he can belong to the drum society. We have 6 drums on the Mille Lacs reservation. Therefore, there are 6 distinct groups. Sometimes those that belong to the drum society belong to about 2 or 3 drums at the same time. Arthur belongs to 2 drums on the Mille Lacs reservation and another one in the Berger area. We don't dress anymore in distinct clothes. We wear our ordinary clothes. There is one man who does the praying. He's like a priest. Everything else he does like this. He asks for the things just like a preacher does when he gives his sermons and stuff like that. And our families belong to the drum dance too. There isn't anybody that is denied the right to go into a drum society ceremonial. The only time they don't allow it is when a person is intoxicated or starts to disturb. It's all right for him to come in and sit down and listen and stay there and not be a bothersome person. They do not deny him the right to come.